to Strange Cast Player One. This was Life the Strange podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Adnan. My co-host Adam is here. Adam, you here?
I'm here. I am present. I am in the moment.
Yes, you're here in the moment. We're back after a little bit of a longer period. We changed our schedule around because the last episode we had Eric and Mori on, which you can go and watch, and you should watch. It was a kind of a full-on Expanse special. We spoke to about stuff, and I think there was a couple of Life is Strange bits, but it was mainly Expanse related. There is a bit of Expanse in here. A little bit of Life is Strange, but as of like next month, we'll kind of get more heavy back on Life is Strange. I know that the topics have kind of been here and there, but we'll get back onto it properly next month because just kind of been news left, right, and center from different developers. But either way, go and watch that episode. It's really fun. We talked to Eric Mori, which is great. So definitely check that out. But as always, if you are new here, please do consider dropping a subscribe, turn on notifications, like the video, and share with your friends. Helps keep up to date with the content, helps stay up to date with our content. And Strangecast is available on all podcast services, so you can check us out on Apple Podcasts, we're on Spotify, we're on Amazon Music, we're on all, and Stitcher comes at the end of this month, so we won't be on that anymore. Adam, we've got some exciting news. Should we kick off things?
Oh, do you?
Yes. So, you ready?
I'm so ready.
Okay, so let's go with the first piece of news. So we're going to Don't Know Montreal. This is our first piece of news. A little bit unexpected, but we kind of have more information to feed to you and drip feed to you here. So I'm going to Fred's, and we have Luke Bagados, who works at Don't Know Montreal, who worked on Life is Strange 2. I feel like I don't need to reveal who he is now after having spoken about him for about 50 plus episodes.
Yeah.
But Luke posted a picture, which is quite nice. And he put, "Look who's back," and he CC'd Michel Coe, also who he works with at Don't Know Montreal, Life is Strange 1 and 2 co-director. But in between, there's a very special person in the photo as well. I'd actually sent Luke a message on Instagram story saying, "Look who's back, Big Philip." And he's like, "Ha ha ha, yes." So yes, the man in the middle of the photo, which might be the thumbnail, I presume it might be the thumbnail, I'll probably nick it for the thumbnail, is yes. Philip Bark, who's standing there. And he was, for many of you who have watched Life After Strange will know that the voice actors of the series heavily worked with Philip Bark because he was the VO director on Life is Strange 1, Before the Storm, and Life is Strange 2. They basically moved to a full body performance capture for True Colors, but he is back on this project. So yeah, that was our piece of news. And there was also a screenshot that we found on Instagram stories from Mary, who works at Don't Know Montreal, and there's a photo that said "It's a wrap." So it was like a little, you know, a photo there. Luke's in there, Michelle's in there, Mary's in there,
Philippe,
Philip Barker's in there. He's quite like little tucked away, hidden inside. I believe that's Frederica on the right. I believe that's Marin at the back. Who's Blood Fiend? Look at the handle, Blood Fiend. There's a handle there in the bottom corner where it says Blood Fiend. I think that might be Juliet. No, my name is Juliet. I think it's not. Yes, so this is the first piece of news, and I'm going to quickly find out whose tag this is. So you're going to see live action investigation.
Me and Adnan spoke off camera about this, saying like, "It's a wrap." Like, what's a wrap? Is it a wrap? Is it like, did they get sandwiches and they got wraps? Is the whole set a wrap? Like what's in a box? So it's kind of like a mystery of what's a wrap, but Adnan is investigating. He will interrupt me, but yeah, this I want to say it's pronounced Philippe because it's only one L, and
not the Stephen Stefan dilemma again. I can't call him Stephen. I kept calling Steven at the end of the episode. I was like, "Why am I? Stop it! Like, stop it!"
It's very much a bring in team members of Life is Strange. So it's going to be their next game might be like a Life is Strange light, you know, much like a Metroidvania is the way it is. But this might be Life is Strange light because they're bringing in the heavy hitters of voice acting coaches. So I am in for the corny lines of Life is Strange. Like, I am here for it. So the more corny lines, the better. So, and the more directions of those corny lines, the better, in my opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. So
Yeah.
Yeah, completely agree with you. So this is the picture I am referring to, which I'll pull on my screen. This was also, we tweeted this off Player One versus the World. So this is the It's a Wrap photo. No hot dog man, as we called Luke Bagadoff.
No sandwiches.
No sandwiches, no It's a Wrap, nothing. So I did a bit of work on this, and no, it was not Juliet who's the bottom left. So from that photo I just showed you, bottom left is Kathy V. Next to her is Marion Eskian. Then next to her, I believe, is Frederica. And then behind Frederica will be Philip Bach.
Mm-hmm.
Then behind Phil will be Luke. Then the person next to Luke, I believe, is Marin.
Mm.
Then the person next to Marin is obviously Michelle.
Michelle, yeah.
So I think in that order, that is all the people that are in the photo. So yeah, as Adam said as well, it's quite interesting because It's a Wrap does mean quite a few things as well. It means that, well, yeah, they could be much further ahead in this project than we think they are. Do you know what, as well, it kind of makes sense as well, because we were like, we saw that photo a while back when they were in the mocap studio and they were working on stuff, and there's like being little cryptic hints from Michelle with like not cryptic, even just him like showing VO booths and stuff like that. So it does make sense. I'm intrigued by what Philip Bach is doing in terms of like, is he doing performance capture with them? Is he doing like body mocap with them? What kind of extent are they doing this project with? Because it's like, the first Life is Strange, the second Life is Strange were both motion capture, but not full body performance capture. So they did, obviously, Luke, it was obviously Michelle and I believe Raoul Barbé, who were mainly down the mocap studio sets with the actors doing performance capture. And then Philip Bach did the VO work with the actors on there. But obviously,
we did see one picture from the new studio that it did look like a motion capture studio. It was that first photo that we looked at where they were like, oh, we're looking at different artists and all that, and it looked like a mocap studio.
Yeah, so what I'm wondering though is, if is it performance capture or motion capture? So is it like with full body, so you can see their faces and stuff like doing it? Because like, it was just below the head with the first Life is Strange games and even BTS. So it's like, I'm not sure like what kind of like what they're doing with this. Are they, like, Phil Bach has got experience like doing film work, etc., outside of, you know, VO booth work. So are they actually going full performance capture? So there's quite a few questions to ask. It's quite nice that they're working with Phil Bach again, because obviously they know Phil for so long, and all the actors pretty much I ever spoke to, and especially like with Gonzalo when he was working with on Sean Diaz, it's like he had so much admiration for working with Philip Bach, and then also with Michelle. And he was like, and you could see that Michelle and Phil got on quite well. Well, just in general senses, it always seemed to be Phil and Michelle doing the VO sessions. Like Michelle was on the kind of like Skype calls, Skype calls, Zoom calls, maybe. Who knows? Like it feels like my date is saying Skype calls. But yeah, it seems like naturally. It's not necessarily like, I think it's just better to stick with what you know, kind of thing. I think like, why would they want to bring in another VO actor if they can work with the one that they've worked with for so long? It's similar to like Deck Nine always uses Sylvia Gregory for like the casting stuff of like their games. So it's like, why would they drift away from that? And the same with the performance captures. But interesting photo nonetheless. It does raise some questions about how far the project is coming along. I think it's much further ahead than we think it is.
It's a wrap on the voice acting work, if anything else. But even then, it's like, I feel like it's too early for voice acting work. But we don't know. Like, we don't know. It's just like, there's so many things.
What I've realized after seeing this photo is I scaled back my expectations in the game that they're making, because it's not as big as we think it is. Again, it's like, it's that same vein of like Life is Strange 1, Oxenfree, Life is Strange 2-esque kind of like position. It's not AAA. It's not going to be 6 or 7 years out, et cetera, blah, blah. It's a much smaller scale project. So it's like, what you have with your resources, you work with your resources. Mm-hmm. So I think It's a Wrap was probably that they have done the motion capture. Now, I think probably the motion capture is done. Like, I don't know what the specifics are. That's why I'm intrigued with it. It's like, is it full performance capture? So they're doing both the motion capture and the voice acting at the same time? Or are they just doing the performance capture? Sorry, the motion capture, and then they're doing the voiceover work afterwards? It seems to be the second one, because that's what they did with the first two Life is Strange games. And also kind of like aligns with what I've seen with previous stuff, where it's like with Michelle tweeting pictures of like a VO booth, and then also like them being in the motion capture studio. So it kind of like makes strategic sense with that. And then obviously all the other devs who are there as well, like, you know, you have Kathy V, Marion. It's like, they're obviously there because it's like they're quite far, you know, into the project now. It's like they're going to have to be there in their own roles, and they're going to have to see what's kind of coming together, because I don't think this project is as far out as I think it is now. I'd be bold enough to say it's about 75% complete now.
Do you think, and today's the day, you know what? Wait, hold on. Today is, it's the second day of Gamescom. And so Luke and Michelle are at Gamescom.
Is he actually at Gamescom, Luke?
Yeah, I saw him tweet, or I saw the mention that, or no, only Don't Nod, I believe.
Don't Nod is at Gamescom right now. So Jusan
is at the... I thought Luke said he was like, but I guess not. No, he wasn't.
So I'm going borderline stalkish level here. Don't Nod is at Gamescom right now, and they've been doing stuff for Jusan, and then also one of the other topics, the Studio Telema game, which they've been talking about. Yes. They've been doing interviews there.
Did you see, by the way, Don't Nod tweeted out a picture on our way to Gamescom, and they showed officially Don't Nod showed a picture of Hot Dog Man in the train.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what does this mean? Like, I don't think it means anything, though. Like,
no, it's nothing.
On the real, it doesn't mean anything. I think they're just being cute, you know?
Yeah, I saw all the replies and people are freaking out, like a new Life is Strange game. It's like, no, it's not that. Maybe that's Luke's Hot Dog Man. Who knows?
That's what I mean. I was like, what if Luke is there? I don't know.
I don't think he's there, because last time I saw there was a cupcake that he posted with Don't Nod Montreal on it, a sticker.
Mm.
Like, it was like, and I was like, surely he must be still being in Canada. Or it's like he's been very cryptically like flown out. I don't think they'll take Gamescom as a stage, and I think the Game Awards are still coming later this year.
Yes.
I think that's the kind of first date where I see potentially a reveal or something with this game. I don't think they're going to do it at Gamescom. Gamescom was a place where I think was the first Life is Strange announced at Gamescom. I think maybe it was.
Yes.
I think there was a presence there, I remember, with the first game, Life is Strange. But I don't feel like they will announce it at Gamescom. I think like the other things that Don't Nod is preoccupied with, which is Jusant and then also Telema's game, which again we'll talk about the next topic. They seem to be more like the kind of focus at the minute. So I don't think they're going to reveal anything else for the time being. I will probably assume that they are going to reveal this game now this year. I have a funny feeling of it. I think the expectations I initially set were much higher than what I thought with this game, in terms of I thought it was a much bigger budget, etc., and I was thinking it's quite further out in the line. I don't think it is now. I think, personally speaking, based on just this photo alone with the one with Phil and all the other, it's a wrap. I think they're probably about 75% complete in the production stage now of this game. I think we're really close to getting a reveal. I think we're really, really close. Like, we will see more, and we'll definitely have more news that we'll be covering before the end of the year. It just seems like things are kind of like are kind of aligned here, and I think the words very quickly of "it's a wrap" kind of says a lot. And it's like Philip Barker has been very like, this is like, where was it now? Luke posted this on a week ago. We're recording the 24th of August. There's been no mention of Phil prior to this. It's like, well, you wouldn't just bring him in all of a sudden and then start saying, "Oh, Philip Barker's here." And it's like he's doing this. It's like you've obviously been working with him for quite some time on this project. So I think personally, I think they're quite far ahead into it. Like, because even like the job listings as well for Montreal, they're very like not that far in many, if anything. It's kind of like just X, you know, X role and Y role. And it's kind of like, we're working on this. So it's kind of like whatever needs touching up, etc., you can bring people in. It's like they're not heavily studio building at the minute. It's like the people who work there are already there. So, I think it's very exciting now. I think this is kind of like a nice little reference in there, and it's also, you know, as I said, we have all the devs in here as well. I thought it was Juliet in the bottom left. Completely messed that up. Apologies, Kathy. Apologies, Kathy, if you're watching this.
Wow.
But yeah, that's Kathy. Well, I think I got everyone there. I think I got everyone there.
Yes. I believe you're right.
We shall see. Have you got anything else to add about this?
I just think that it'll be kind of a rip for us if like they do reveal today at Gamescom. And we're recording this. So.
I'll be furious. I'll be absolutely furious if that happens. Furious in a good way. Like, that's just like, that'll be just the icing on the cake. But I'm pretty sure we won't see anything at Gamescom.
Yeah.
I'm going to put my head out on that. If not, again, this is going to age very poorly, and we'll have to record something in between it. Anyway, Adam, next topic.
Yes.
This is exciting, this, actually. Yes. So Don't Nod announced on the 17th of August a new game. Oh. So they put out on a tweet saying, befriend a puppy and embark on a magical adventure together in Korea? Koira. Our newest upcoming game, developed and hand-drawn by Studio Telema. Koira is a heartwarming tale of friendship and discovery. So on top of this, and I'm going to go to Games Reactor. They put the French company Don't Nod has announced the second third party game that it will be publishing, known as Koira. The title is a hand-drawn adventure game that is being developed by Belgian studio Telema, and will be looking to tell a story of a forest spirit and its puppy companion as they embark on a musical and magical journey. We're told the game will see the forest spirit relying on the puppy's variety of abilities to overcome challenges and to protect it from danger, and that it will be a 2D title that features an original soundtrack. Game director Ben Lager states, and I quote, Koira is an evocative experience that explores the theme of friendship with a little puppy. Though a thoughtful and minimalistic approach, our story comes to life relying on the powerful combination of expressive hand-drawn graphics and a poignant original soundtrack. The game is our love letter to the medium, and we can't wait to start sharing more details about it, end quote. In terms of launch, all we are told right now is the game is planned for 2025 and will be released at least on PC via Steam.
Man. So,
yes. Start with, do you want me to go? Do you want to talk?
Yeah, go for it. You can go.
So aesthetically, it looks beautiful.
Oh, yes.
Aesthetically, I love it. I like kind of like it captured me the minute I watched the kind of like little trailer and the hand. I am a sucker for hand-drawn art. I love hand-drawn art. Even the old school animations of the past of my lifetime, etc. The hand-drawn stuff is always the best for me by far.
Which also Oxenfree is hand-drawn.
Exactly. And I still loved it for that as well. I love the fact that it just kept with what it was as well. Like, and I hope that Montreal do the same thing with like Life is Strange 1 and 2 as well, and keeps the hand-drawn look that they do with that. But anyway, Telema, well, this game as well, Koira, it looks beautiful. It looks really, really nice. Quite far out, which I think at this point, considering how the game looks, I think it's probably more budgeted than Gerda.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I'm a bit surprised that they announced it now in 2023 and 2025 is the release.
Like the middle of 2023.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's wild.
Yeah, it's quite... I think maybe they probably just don't have to give it as much marketing as humanly possible for the next year and a bit at least. Like, it must be like something that they're trying to build with marketing. It seems like a higher end game, if anything, not as high end as the in production games at Don't Nod, the ones that they're self publishing themselves as developers and publishers. But it's kind of like they have like seemed to have rolled a bit more budget at this game just based on the aesthetic of it. It looks a lot more refined.
That's what I mean. It's like it looks, I don't want to say it looks finished because like we don't know what the real state of the game is. Like, this is just a trailer that they developed. But to say that, like, yeah, like we got this game, it's coming out. Oh, speaking of puppy, my puppy's leaving. Bye.
Oh,
see ya. But yeah, so it's just wild to me that like a game that looks the way it looks right now is just saying like, yeah, like here's our new game in over a year. I'm like, what? That's wild. But okay, sure. I mean, we don't know what the actual state is of this game.
Yeah, I think it's quite far out still. I think because of the hand-drawn aesthetic, it makes the game look like it's more further towards finish line. Mm-hmm. I probably think it's quite early doors, if anything.
Yeah.
So in itself, quite a while away. It seems like obviously again the emphasis on the music and the kind of like the storytelling they're going to be doing the game very much similar to the Don't Nod ethos of like poignant stories. A dog seems to be Don't Nod's kind of thing as well. Love dogs, even though some of them they kill and sometimes they keep them there. But like, no, I'm excited for it. I don't have much else to add to it. Like, again, it's only Don't Nod's second independently developed, independently published game that they're doing outside of like Twin Mirror. So obviously Gerda was the first one that they did with Portal Play, which is now Skybird, is it? Skybird Island or something?
Bird Island, I believe.
Bird Island that they did with them, formerly known as Portal Play. And then also now with Telema. We've known for a while that Telema is the next game that we're going to publish with from an outside studio. And it's now been revealed. So in all, we've got quite a lot. So it's like, for the minute, so just off the games that we have from Dontnod, we know about Jusant. We know about, what's the other game called now? Oh my God, man. Harmony. So we know about Jusant. We know about Harmony. We know about Telema's game. We've known about Gerda. There are two games now that we still don't have names for. That is the Montreal game, and there's another one.
Yes.
So there's six games that had in the pipeline up to 2025.
Yes. Was this one of the logos, I'm assuming?
It must have been.
Yeah, so like let me put in the real name, not all one word, because Dontnod teases games in logo trailer. Let's see. Okay. So we got videotape. We got, okay, that one's Banishers. There's one with falling stars.
That one's not being revealed.
Yeah. No, so that one hasn't been.
So those two games for reference.
Ooh. Yeah, and then the bottom two. Yep. Yeah, we haven't seen that. Of course, we know the. Also, which one is the green mist? There's some green mist one, and I feel like we've got a reveal for that. Could this no? I don't know what that is. Of course, is Harmony. Yeah, there's like a green mist one right before Harmony. Then we got Jusant. Yeah. And then we got Gerda with This Is a Snow. Yes. And that's it. So I don't think we have a reveal for Koira in this.
Yeah, I'm surprised they didn't tweet the logo either. They usually kind of came clean about it afterwards.
It's true. The Fallen Stars. In the green
Banishers is one.
Well, yeah, Banishers is the one after the videotape. So there's Banishers there, and then there's a Falling Star one, and then there's one that has green mist over a planet, looks like, that we haven't gotten revealed yet. None of these look like Koira.
So that will be the other one then. Then it'll be the green mist one, and it'll be the videotape, which will be the two games that haven't been officially revealed.
So wait, what's the Falling Stars one then? Yeah. There's three. I don't think Koira was part of this logo drop.
Well, surely it must have been, because Fingy was part of it. Gerda.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I'm like, I don't know which one this would be, because like it doesn't really fit the aesthetic of any of it. If anything, it's...
Or was the Telema partnership announced after the rebrand that they did everything?
I think it was after. Yeah. So there's still three games we don't know about.
They always said that their pipeline had six games leading up to 2025. And this is obviously, that's tacked on for 2025 Telema now. So it's like,
If anything, this might be the Falling Stars one then, or the Green Mist. I don't know. It's so wild.
Yeah, it's quite
I don't think it matches any of these aesthetics. Because again, the videotape of course is Montreal. The second one is Banishers. The Falling Stars, the Green Mist, then you got Harmony, and then you got Jusant, then you got Gerda, and then that's it.
So it's about February. I was having a look. It's about February 2022. They announced their partnership with Telema around that time.
And this came out May 31st, 2022.
It's got to be one of them then. I don't know which one it is, but it's going to be one of them. I don't know which one it is though, but it's going to be one of those now. The logos.
I'm going to say it's the Falling Stars. That's the one that best matches the aesthetic.
It seems like it.
Yeah, but anything else, it's like, I don't know.
Yeah, I think that would probably be wise to say it. There's obviously, like, as I said, there's going to be two left now. Like, we know
yes.
the rest of them now. There's no, from what I can tell, they were very clear about being six games in the pipeline. Oscar Gobert was like, we have six games in the pipeline up to 2025. And it's like, these games are going to start coming out and being in production, developed, etc., blah, blah. So either way, this is going to be the latest one. So the next one for me will probably be revealed by the end of the year.
Yes.
Because yeah, these are games that are all coming out within the timeline of things. I think maybe Montreal's game comes out next year now.
Yeah, I think so.
I think it's pretty much now tacked on. I think the other game that we don't know about will be 2025 as well.
Yeah, I agree.
So I think, like, that's personally what I think at the minute. But yeah, it's quite interesting that if you do type in "Don't Know the Logo" on Google Images and scroll down, you do see "Hey, Wanna Play One versus the World's" videos quite far down. It's very good.
Nice.
Very good pick up that for at least us. But yeah, as I said, nonetheless, very excited for Talina's game. It looks quite nice. I want to keep an eye on it. And yeah, we'll keep on top of this as well. Adam, anything else?
Nothing from me.
No. Okay, so we will move on to our next piece of news. Just a little bit of news.
Mm.
Sent the entire Reddit forum into like a frenzy, but you know, as you are. So we are once again referring back to Michel, who we talked about before in the Montreal section, because Michel is now making the news on our podcast again. So this was on the Life is Strange Reddit page. Someone screenshotted a Fred's post, which was from a user called WFZX8, and they put "Is Kate Marsh alive?" ? Because the storm is far from the hospital, and they tagged Michelle, and Michelle's tag is Mimuzu, which I wonder what the reference is for that. Mimuzu.
Ooh. I'd like to know what the reference is for that.
It
might be like Mimuzu. Like,
because
he's French, and they probably have, in France, probably zoos full of mimes, I'm guessing.
Or Mr. Mime is his favorite Pokemon, which would also be a very good turn of events. But
Canonically French.
Exactly, but I think yours is probably more... Well, Mr. Mime is very French stereotypical as well. So
like, I know.
I like your explanation a bit more for what maybe his handle is. But either way, Michel responded, and he put... "We never said it, but I'm pretty sure it should be the case."
Yes.
So people are like almost assuming this is canon. I thought this was just quite a nice little topic to do here. Because, like, again, we have like a lot of things that happen after Life is Strange 1. There's no definitive ending. There's no canon that's ever really been established. It's always been very much whichever choice you take, it's kind of like dictates other games or different mediums, etc. But the kind of idea is that, like, a lot of characters' fates are kind of like left no clear direction on what happens to them. But with Kate Marsh, you know, is she in the hospital? Is she dead in your game?
Is she in the hospital? I was going to say, like, in your playthrough, in the canon, does she survive? You know, and I think that's the real question. It's like, is it canon that you save her? And I think, I'm not sure. Well, like, you have to say yes, but like, didn't they say before that they, correct me if I'm wrong, they like quick developed a scene with Kate in the hospital because of like how much love like they felt like they saw for Kate Marsh, so they kind of quick developed that's not quick, you know, but they wanted a hospital scene.
I believe that is what Day also said as well. I believe that there was a lot of fanfare, so they kind of like introduced a second scene with Kate, because like obviously if you still save her, she goes to the hospital, but there was like no necessary need for the hospital section. Because it kind of does feel a little bit disjointed in the actual episode. It's like it's almost like it was added there afterwards. It's kind of like, again, not it doesn't affect it, but it's like kind of like it doesn't need to necessarily be there. It's kind of like extra filler stuff. But and again, that's not neither a negative nor a positive. I'm just saying it kind of, if it didn't need to be there, it wouldn't have any really negative impact on the story. But yeah, like it pretty much did relate to it because the character very much related to a lot of fans. So they kind of had an opportunity to add a bit of extra more content in there. Yeah, it's quite interesting that I like when Michel weighs in like little things like this with Life is Strange and gives his perspective, because nothing's definitive. Like, I think that they very much intentionally left it the way that they did. And obviously since then,
they're still to this date. They're like, still not revealing whatever is canon. They're just like, nope, still not going to say. Like, that's up to you after all these years.
Yeah, because I feel like if you put canon on something, then it causes too much. I think you kind of like ruin the kind of the ethos that you create with the game. Like, even with like other games I played very earlier on, but even before this, even like the first Metal Gear, there was never like a canon ending still isn't established from the first game.
Right. Yeah.
Like it's like you can go down different storylines, characters still pair, etc. But there's no definitive tacked on ending, which is this is the definitive ending. You have two different endings with two different characters. It's never definitely established. And the same with like these with Don't Nod as well. I don't think if you ever spoke to Michelle or Luke or anyone, they would give you a definitive ending. They'd be like, that's not the entire point of the game. The entire point of the game is choices have consequences. Chaos Theory has Chaos Theory impacts, and whatever else happens is because of choice. And it's driven by choice. So it's like your start to end journey is built on what you've dictated. So I think like for them, you can't just say, "Oh, well, Kate Marsh is definitely going to be alive," because it's like, hang on a minute, is she alive? If the town has been destroyed, isn't the hospital in the town? You know, you can't start messing with your own. Even like when they did Life is Strange 2, you could see as well. It's like you could see the town if it was like there, if it was destroyed, etc. Dave Madsen kind of comes in. It depends on like what you did in the first game and how he interacts with you and how he speaks about Chloe and Max, etc. So I think like they've very much intentionally left it that way. So I don't know where we're picking up from here, because I had to cut something out because it's a very spoiler reference thing I said there. And I don't know where it's going to cut and everything else, but just apologies because we just had a quick 20-second debate about that, and I don't really want to ruin it for anyone who hasn't played it yet. But I think, yeah, on the point of it, I don't think there's a really good way of making definitive experiences, because if you make something definitive and it doesn't like relay in the other project, actually, I'm not going to make that comparison. I can't do it because like it was a really good point. It's just really spoiler heavy. And it's like, oh, frustrating. Nonetheless, I thought we'd bring up this little piece of news. Adam, have you got anything else to add?
Nope. I think we should move on before we get ourselves in trouble again.
Yeah, I'm feeling like I'm in big trouble. I don't know how I'm going to make that cut, but let's see how that goes.
Yeah.
Let's wrap up with our last piece of news, which will be our only real Life is Strange news. And again, apologies. I know I can see it in some of the views and stuff on the videos that people want Life is Strange content. It will come back. It'll be a major topic. It's just because we've been jumping through all developers' news, and it's been very quiet on Life is Strange front, and we've obviously been covering the Expanse. So it's kind of like coming in and going, but we will bring in a Life is Strange topic for the next episode. I can guarantee that. But this last piece of news will be our Life is Strange piece of news, which is that Don't Nod tweeted on the 22nd of August. Today marks 4 years since the release of Life is Strange 2, Episode 4, Faith, a tough part of the Wolf Brothers' journey where their bond and mutual trust will be put to the test. How do you remember this episode? What a great episode.
I was still working in the church when this episode came out.
Damn.
This
was also my final review for Life is Strange I ever did as well. This is the last episode I ever reviewed in the series. So this was a very special moment for me as well. I just kind of think back on it four years ago. You're working in church as well. And this episode is like, damn, this one like must have really hit home.
It was pretty heavy. Like I said, like working in a church while this episode was coming out, I was like, not like an uncomfortable way, but I'm just like, it was hitting me because of like, I've seen this happen. Like I've seen like stuff like this happen. Not to say every church was like this, but it's like I've witnessed this kind of thing happen, and I'm like, yeah, they hit the nail on the head essentially. But like even throwing out like physical tactics to get you away from their agenda, it's pretty heavy. But yeah, no, it's kind of crazy to think about it. Like, yeah, I was working in a church while this Faith episode came out, so kind of crazy in that way. But yeah, it was a good episode. I didn't like this game when it first came out, but this episode I really loved.
Yeah, he became a believer. Yeah. He became a believer.
He became a believer in terms of faith. Yeah.
But it's quite interesting because you played it from that perspective, because like that is a wild perspective to play from, because this one is like that is a very very heavy episode. I think out of all the five from Life is Strange 2. And like this has some of the great moments in it. This is like the great performance from Jolene Anderson as Karen in episode 4.
Yes.
This has a really great, like, you know, the entire cultist things. It was kind of nice with this episode, because like without all the characters that could have come back from the campsite, they chose Jacob And Jacob necessarily wouldn't be like a fan favorite. Like, obviously Cassidy was like kind of like the big one, and then same with Finn. And then like the other characters were like all quite nice and like colorful in their own kind of way. But it's like Jacob seemed like the really quiet one in most parts. And it was like, I don't think many people like really thought, oh, Donald would bring him back for another episode and do it, but they did bring him back, and he was a very centric, heavy part of the story for this one, which probably helped with the credence of like what his backstory was. But it was quite kind of nice to have him in here and kind of have him help like Sean and do what needs to be done with this episode. But it was a wild episode, though. The acting performances were like 10 out of 10, and that's outside of Jolene as well, like Gonzalo Martin and Roman George, etc. They all were great with this performance, like even the entire church scene and everything in between it. It's just, oh,
no, oh, yeah,
it's quite great.
No, it was definitely a fascinating episode to watch. I kind of wish there was more of a consequence with the trucker scene than anything else. Like, there's not really a consequence whether you take it or not. But like when I first played this game, I was like, I'm not getting that truck, no way, like absolutely not. But then my second playthrough, I got into the truck, he's like, oh, here's a sandwich, take a little nap. And I'm like, oh, well, okay then. It's like, but you know, that's the only fault that I have with this episode, but everything else was perfect.
Yeah, it was a deeply uncomfortable scene, that wasn't it, with the with the truckers. Like, oh, it's a really deeply uncomfortable scene. I feel like I should stop trusting people with trucks as well. It gives me that Walking Dead 400 Day vibes when you get in the truck.
Well,
with
that's
that
what
guy.
I mean, though. It's like, it's I didn't get in the truck at first because I was like, what if this guy is weird to me? But like, no, in the end, like, you get into the truck to get to the church, and he's just like, yeah, take a nap. Here's a sandwich my wife made me. It's like, num, num, num. I'm like, okay. But yeah, like the one with, I didn't get into the truck because of the desert scene, you know, where he makes you sing like in your native language, quote unquote, and just like, but now I'm just like, oh, I won't get in the truck then. But I guess that's the whole point of that. It's just like, I guess that's the point where Michelle is kind of like saying, like, not everybody's going to be awful to you, so maybe that's the point, that like you distrust people, so you don't take a good Samaritan's actual thing. Okay, so maybe it is a good, so never mind, it's perfect.
Yeah, Life is Strange shows, like, it's a it's hard to know if the game aged as well as it did. That's the thing for me as well. It's very much a game that is stuck in its time now.
Yes.
And it's like, you have to really like manifest, and like they were very politically and socially charged on a lot of the topics. And I always see, like, when people say like, I don't like Life is Strange, I get it. So I never really had like a fight of like, oh, you don't understand the game and you don't do this. I get it. I've always said this, it's like, I understand why people don't like it, because it's a very, very different experience from like the first Life is Strange from BTS, even True Colors as well, after that as well. But like in experience for the fourth episode, it was just a phenomenal like episode. Like, it was one of the very strong ones. Like, there's always that kind of like reoccurring theme where the fourth episode seems to be quite strong, and this was a very strong one. Personally, I think like the third episode was my favorite in Life is Strange 2, but I really enjoyed the fourth one. And as I said, those performances were great. Like, those scenes, oh, like, those are some of my most memorable scenes. Like, I love Jolene's performance as Karen, and I love that scene where they're sitting outside the is it the motel? It's like a little motel.
Yes,
they're in.
It's like a little motel.
Like, yeah, it's like a little motel. I'm not very good in the American lingo, but like, it's like a little motel, and it's like with, she's having that cigarette, and she's with Sean, and they're both sitting in the chair, and she has this kind of moment where she's like, you know, she's like, I'm not going to apologize for who I am and what I did, but she's like, and I can't be your mum, and she's like, I'm not going to lie to you, but she's like, I can be your friend. And I'm like, oh, like, this woman is like wonderfully written. I'm like, this character is so wonderfully written, and it's like, you just have this kind of really great relationship that you build with her through with Sean, and it's like, you just, things align really well. And it's like, it's kind of like the trials and tribulations of Sean Diaz in that episode, where it's like up and down and up and down and up and down. It's like, this guy is like going through hell, and it's like everything that else happens, and yeah, it's just quite the experience. I love that. How do you feel about Roman's outfit when he's in the church as well? Was that very church on point as well?
Oh god, yeah. Oh my god, yeah. It was everything was just like on point with the culture of like some of those places. Yeah.
Do you feel differently now because you're not in the church?
Feel differently about this episode, or
just in general? Because you played it once when you were in the church, and then once without it after, like, when we started doing the podcast and stuff. How different are the experiences?
Like, that's the thing. It's like, playing it outside of churches is kind of like, because I still have some of those like experiences, some of those witnesses. It's just kind of like, it still like brings me back. So I don't know. I don't like playing this episode too much just because like, I don't like living in that, like knowing that's really out there. Like all that stuff is like, that's real, dude. And I don't like thinking about that. But I think we should be thinking about it because there are places that take advantage of the religion and, you know, like they don't really follow to that religion. I don't know. I don't want to get too deep into this, but yeah, no, it's, yeah, it still hits the same. Yeah. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. I can imagine. It's a very difficult episode, stomach in parts. It's like very poignant with a lot of its themes. So yeah, I completely understand with that. But yeah, that'll be the topic. Should we move into our main topic or news piece?
Sorry. Let's do it.
Cool. So yeah, as I said, this probably is a shorter episode anyway, but we're going to go back to The Expanse again. which, as I said to you as well, the last episode you can watch with Eric Komori, who was additional motion capture for Kamina Drummer, as also Life is Strange, True Colors star, BAFTA nominated, Alex Chen herself. So you can go and check that one. I would 100% recommend you check it out because it's a very much great, fun episode to watch. But we decided to basically do another kind of like review of The Expanse. We're going to do episode 2. Technically, episode 3 is out today, where we're at. Episode 3 is out today. I was hoping that we'd do episode 3 and 2 today, but at the same time, it's like we've had loads of different issues and we're just going to generally talk about episode 2 and then in general how we feel about The Expanse so far, because I have very mixed feelings, and that also includes why I've not been able to play it prior to us recording, because we're recording the 24th of August. So Adam, episode 2, The Expanse, came out. Do you want me to go first? Do you want to go first?
I think you have more opinions than I do, I think, so.
Yeah. I thought this was a very underwhelming episode. Very underwhelming. After what I thought was a strong opener, which you could kind of be, like, forgived for in terms of, like, the pacing, this was just a little bit on the dry side of my personal opinion. Like, not much really happens in the episode. Like, not really much happens at all, really, in the episode. Again, it's very short. It's like, this is now, again, like, a one-hour experience. Something. I feel like this seems to be the tone of it. So I think like collectively when you play it, once it comes out at launch, you might be happy with it. But at the minute, it's kind of like waiting every 2 weeks for a 1 hour experience, if that. And that's obviously, it's more longer if you're drifting around in space and floating around looking for miscellaneous items. Then yeah. But generally speaking, yeah, I was kind of like really underwhelmed by the episode because there was some, like, one thing I have an issue with, and I said this as well, there was so many people, and I don't know, do we do spoilers? Do we not do spoilers?
On episode 2, let's just give a quick spoiler warning. Yeah, like, we're going to spoil it.
Yeah, okay, so at this point, we're going to move into spoiler territory. Watch at your own discretion at this point. Actually, you know what, Adam, as well, I'll do it like lighthearted spoilers, if anything. It's not like intense. I won't do like big key story points. One of the things that happened with early on is like there's a side objective where you have to look for medicine for a character. Mm-hmm. The problem with this game is, and when they give you side missions, there's no objective marker to go towards or even kind of an inkling of where you'll find random object for side mission. So in the first mission you did in the first game, you missed the side objective because it's like in a really obscure place that you basically have to float to it and then get it. And I got it because I was basically exploring for ages. And it's the same with this episode. Like, this is one that I looked basically for a better part of, like, maybe 20 minutes in the first area. That is the main area of the entire episode as well. And I couldn't find it. And then I decided to play it again whilst I was doing the collectible run and kind of getting things. It was basically tacked on, this medicine, underneath this panel where you just basically float upside down and you can grab it. I'm like, why is it there? I'm like, why is it? There's no logic for it to be that. Like, at some point in the entire episode, you go through, like, a little medical facility and stuff. And the medicine's not there. Instead, you pick up another item for another side objective. And I'm like, hang on a minute. It's like, I got that one. And then when I got to the end of the episode, I was thinking, I was like, wait a minute, did I miss the medicine for this character? So actually, I did. How did that come about? That makes no sense at all.
Usually in other games, like, you'll at least have, like, this is the area that it could be in. Like, but there's no indication. Okay, see you later, buddy. But yeah, there's like no indication of, it's like, it's in this area. But yeah, that's one of the most frustrating parts. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like at least give you like a general vicinity where you're looking for something. That would be helpful. But it doesn't seem to do that this episode. It's like, it's, or even at any point in The Expanse, it's kind of like just there's a side objective, and it's like, hang on a minute, but where are we going? It's like, well, am I going to find something here? It's like, there's no kind of like clear cut direction on it. So it was just a bit difficult in that. And then in itself, like, I really enjoyed, there's a one scene in the entire episode with, like, you get a big exposition on Khan. And also carries over the item as well. You can carry an item over from the first episode. But you get big exposition in Khan. I love Khan. Khan is a great character. It would have been very interesting to see Erica Mori as Khan if she'd got that. That would have been quite the performance. But, like, Khan is great. I love Khan. It's like, when you have more time with that, it's great. But ultimately, because what happens by the end of the episode, the major, major choice compared to the first episode, and by the way, now we will go into spoilers as well here. I'm going to take it into full spoiler territory, so feel free to skip just straight to Spread the Art, or if you want to do it, watch your own discretion, or skip 10 minutes ahead, do as you please. The problem is with the first episode, the main choices you had was someone loses their leg, or they don't lose their leg, and two was send Cox out of the air duct, or keep him in the air duct. With this one, it's basically either you have sex with Maya, or you don't have sex with Maya. I'm like, what is that for a major choice? I'm like, come on. I'm like, okay, I get it. She, like, kind of builds up, and she's like, you know, people will talk about it on the Artemis, and et cetera, et cetera. And I'm like, is it really that deep? I'm like, because even Telltale,
I can see that being one of the choices, but to be the main decision,
it's just not a main decision, even because Telltale have done this in the past. In the season four run of The Walking Dead, you have a love interest choice between Violet and the other guy. I can't remember what the other guy's called in The Walking Dead season four. Violet and the curly haired guy. You can have an option to have a love interest, but is it Marlon? Marlon, I think it might be.
That Violet sounds right.
Or Marlon, I can't remember. I think it's Marlon. You can basically have an option to have a love interest with them, but it's never a major, major choice. It's not the dun-dun, and it's like, you know, it's like a make or break choice. This was truly the make or break choice, which was either sleep with this woman or don't sleep with her. And I'm like, really? I'm like, really? Is this what your main choice is the entire episode? Like, the last one, I had one where it's either send the guy out the air duct or keep him in there. It's like, you're now making this the main choice.
Yeah.
Very, very, very.
I like that choice a little bit better because of the help he can provide later on, because we've already established that your playthrough, you sent Cox out into space. I've kept him. So it's just kind of like it's like the Cox that we keep, you know. And it's like that kind of choice where it's just like, do you keep this man alive to give you directions, or do you send him out because he's a detriment? You know, that I can get behind, but the choice of just like sleep with her or don't sleep with her, I didn't. I was just like, I'm gonna go to bed. Like, no, like I'm not about this. Edwin, what was your choice? What was your?
I went straight into a fucking ring. Oh, I got a swore. That's the Erica Mori moral as well. Oh god,
you're just
it.
Like, this isn't a choice. This is a real choice. I'm gonna go in there.
I'm gonna have to bleep that out now. God damn it. Yes, I went straight into a room. I was like, yeah, cool. Let's see how this love interest kind of plays out. It's just it's just a little bit underwhelming overall.
Yeah,
I think, like, that was my issue with it. Like, were there any other moments that you really enjoyed in it? And I'm going to let you talk because I need to let my cat in. So if you want to give me any of your favorite moments, please do.
I'm kind of looking forward to episode 3. Me and Adden have not played it yet. And I'll let Adden say why he hasn't played it. We're recording this on Thursday morning. So right after this episode, I'm going to start playing episode 3. And I'll let Adden explain why he hasn't. He has a deluxe edition on PlayStation. But for me, I like the playthrough of the lasers, like all the robots, like, and you have to like flow through the lasers. I like that aspect. But for the most part, there wasn't anything memorable just yet. And I remember Ed and I were going to discuss like a spoiler review of The Expanse. And after episode 1, I was like, I need a second episode to like really dive deep into these characters, know where the story is going. This episode 1 was really short, and then episode 2 does the same thing. It's like really short. I didn't get really enough time with these characters, and it was just like, I want to know more about these characters, but there's not enough time with them. So it's just like one of those things of like, I need to see this game as a whole. And I kind of wish this wasn't episodic. I really wish this was Life is Strange True Colors, where there's chapters instead of episodes. Because if we're going to be this short, I want it all collective then, you know? But Adnan, I said that for me, I haven't played this because I bought the deluxe edition on Xbox. Xbox has told me that I have the deluxe edition, but there's no 24 hours early access for me. No, sir. But you're on PlayStation. You have a deluxe edition. Why didn't you play it?
So by merit, I have the deluxe edition. This is like summed up why I feel so like frustrated and kind of like torn about things as well. In general, like I spent like the better part of 20 minutes talking to Sony before I even came on this podcast, because apparently I had purchased the deluxe edition of The Expanse, but I received the standard edition instead. So I got none of the benefits. I don't get the extra 24-hour early access. I don't get the bonus episode. And it's like, hang on a minute, you charged me more for it as well. So I've currently asked for a refund from Sony because I'm like, I want my money back now because the deluxe edition is even cheaper. So it's like, what is even going on here? So that is the reason why I have not played episode 3. It's quite frustrating because I even asked Erica Mori about how she felt about the second episode having like technical issues here and there, which I thought was very brave, always considering.
I am a brave individual.
Yeah, you are very brave to say that like to her. But like I understand why people were so frustrated with the second episode with the way it launched. And then also like when you said about, I think what you said before as well about episodic games, it should have been chapter based. I think episodic gaming is dead now with this.
I just think give my thing. The deluxe edition has not changed on Xbox on mine.
Oh,
it's still $45 US.
Damn.
So it might have changed for PlayStation, which now I'm gonna look that up. Hold on,
it's a bit cheaper on PlayStation now for me at least.
Let me just check that. I believe you, but I want to see the US dollar amount. No, it's still $45 US on PlayStation. Yeah. You Brits have it much better. You were saying that I'm very brave. Yes, continue.
Yeah, you were very brave for saying that to her, but also in terms of the episodic thing you said as well. I think like episodic
we're good, but you're saying that episodic game is
I think like episodic gaming is dead now.
Yes,
I think like this is the end of I think this shows it as well. Like if you aren't producing 2 or 3 hour long episodes, I think that now it's kind of like it's gone at this point as a genre and as a kind of way of releasing episodes. I just don't think it's going to work because like the adventures are too small in each episode. So it's like, as I said, if you get rid of all the mundane kind of like floating through the sky, if you don't want to do it, it's not much meat on the bone at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the unfortunate part. Like they could have easily done more content in terms of like scenes where it's just you and other characters. Like you have a bit of time with the character here and there, and you kind of get a bit more exposition with Virgil in the second episode, but not enough with like terms of like those scenes where it's like we can't. It's like you could easily have done like a 10-minute scene with Khan in the first episode and just filled an extra kind of bit of weight of the game. But it's like they aren't as consistent across the episodes with like a lot of characters who are sitting down with each other, kind of fleshing out stories, etc. So that's my difficulty with The Expanse at the minute, because it's like it's ultimately tied where it's like they should have just released it like Life is Strange True Colors, released it as chapters, and you can just play the chapter as you want to go with it. Because at this point, you're kind of just releasing episodic games or under the guise of episodic games, which what Telltale was very much revered for, but they're very, very short experiences.
Yes.
And this game as well, like this game was like built during the revival of Telltale, of this new revival of Telltale. And it's like still, I'm still answering that question, like, is this a Deck Nine game or is it a Telltale game? Or is it a both game? Or is it like who's like got the more of the kind of like name baggage on it?
I think we're going to see Telltale, like really Telltale, once Wolf Among Us 2 comes out. I think that's what we'll see. And your statement of episodic games are dead, I think we're going to really see that with Wolf Among Us 2. Because really, the episodic games that Deck Nine has given us was Before the Storm, and then True Colors was chapters. So, like, we haven't really seen a true-to-life episodic game really since Life is Strange 2. I don't think we have. Scratch that, because Season 4 of Walking Dead came out after Life is Strange 2. Yeah, it came out after.
But that was a bit of a mess, and though, wasn't it?
That was a bit of a mess. Yeah, like that's the thing. We haven't really seen it since then, and that's really Telltale's fault. So I don't know. Like, we don't really know if episodic gaming is dead, because we're coming from a studio that has released a 3-game episode and then they went to a chapter based. And now the next thing we're going to see is a true to life episodic game being Wolf Among Us 2. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like, I need more data to know if, like,
well, episodic, who else is making episodic games, though?
That's what I mean, though. Them? No, like, one's wanting to touch them.
Like, no one's really touched them. Like, the only people who really touched them was, like, Don't Nod did it with, like, the Life is Strange games, and then also Square, Deck Nine did it with one, really, like, one offing with Before the Storm, and then you kind of had, like, mainly Telltale doing it with, like, all these different, like, different franchises they were doing with episode of games. You had, like, the occasional one with, like, you had that weird kind of era where Square Enix was dividing games as well. It was that Hitman that was episodic, that became episodic all of a sudden, and then Capcom did it with, like, Resident Evil as well. It was like, why are you releasing this game once you fully made it and then started making it episodes?
Resident Evil Revelations, that was a banger. That was actually a banger.
Yeah, but it's still weird, though, the entire concept. Like, why don't you just release
the game?
It's like, the game's built. It's not even checked. Like, I think I remember, because I didn't play it, but people said it's like, it finished at weird points.
Oh, yeah.
It wasn't
episodic
structured, because it's like, it just finished abruptly. And it's like, hang on a minute. It's like, so you're not actually built with the episode. Like, look at what the Don't Nod team did with Life is Strange 1 and 2. It was built episodically. It has chapters. It has start, middle, and end points. It's very logically built. But with, like, Capcom, it was kind of like, oh, everyone loved episodic gaming, we'll just split Resident Evil apart and make it episodic. It's like, hang on a minute. So this is what really people want. But, like, they did it. And then the only other studio I remember that did it outside of them lot and did it properly episodic was Big Bad Wolf of the Council, which I, again, will recommend, because the Council's a banger. And Adam loves the Council as well. But anyway, like, generally speaking, like, they're the games that do it. So, like, since then, nothing else has really happened. This is the first, quote unquote, proper, fully fledged episodic outing. Even Tell Me Why was kind of like a bit of a weird kind of outing of, like, episodic games. It was almost like that could have been chapter based, if anything.
I think
the episodic game has now evolved into the chapter system at this point. And whether that's, like, kind of fully released at the same time with chapters, or basically separately released as chapters, the verdict's out on that.
I'm also trying to, like, look up if somebody, I thought this was another great episode. I definitely think it was a bit on the shorter side again. So it looks like episode 3 will also be another
short.
You can get through this one in 30 to 40 minutes, a Reddit user is saying, for three episodes. The third episode is only like 30 to 40 minutes, which I remember I told you in episode 2, before you played it, as like, I beat it in about an hour, and that was with dying twice with the laser people and taking a Twitter break, and that was an hour.
Yeah, Twitter break as well.
Yeah,
that's quite it was like I remember, because it's like, it's very like linear objectives. It's like two objectives in like the main area of the first game, then you go into the other ship, you do the objectives on that, bang, straight back into the main ship, game done at that point. So it's very like straight to the point where it's like almost like, you know, where it's clockwork, where it's going to start and end. So if like the third episode's like that, I'm kind of a little bit again like now just expecting like it's going to pretty much be like almost hour each episode, and then it's like collectively it's a 5-hour experience, 6 including the bonus episode.
That's what I mean. So I think this game will age nicely, because, you know, it's a good sell. Like, it's a 5-hour game with multiple endings. Hopefully we don't know. We don't know if there's like multiple endings or not, but it has to be with all these choices. But yeah, it's just kind of like, we are going to see how well this game will age. Like, once we get to episode 5 and we play it, and it's just going to be like, is this game going to age well? And I think right now it will, but for right now, it's just kind of like a bit messy. It's like, this wasn't revealed to us in the right way. You know, and it's disappointing, because this is the first Telltale game we're getting, and it's the episodes are not 2 hours long. They're not 2-3 hours long. They're just 30 minutes, 40 minutes, an hour.
Yeah.
It's like, it's a little disappointing.
They don't have the weight for it to kind of do it. Like, they should just basically, if it's going to age well, because like when you have all 5 episodes, you can play, it's like, oh, actually this was fun. But the problem is every reviewer is going to make the same comment where it's like, the episodes are too short. And it's going to affect you, because it's like, even now it's like, I'm excited to play the Expanse episode 3, but at the same time, I'm like, I'm waiting 2 weeks every week in between it. And my interest is like going into different things. Like, I played Yakuza 2 in between it. So it's like, my interest is moving towards something else. Just like gravitating slowly away from the Expanse, and no pun intended with the gravity part. But like, you know, it's kind of like, that's how I feel at the minute. So I feel like it's a bit of an issue, because it's like something that's kind of given me a little bit of concern with how they handle the Wolf Among Us 2, how they do that, because like that will be the definitive stamp of like where we stand with
it. I think so.
I've kind of stood up where I think I'm at now. I think I'm pretty much on with it as well, where it's like it's going to be chapter based now, if anything. Chapter based with like a couple of like weeks in between if they want to spread episodes out. But like the old school episodic format is dead, don't know. And it's a shame as well, because if you're going to release games that way, you have to have them at least 2 or 3 hours long, minimum.
And they're still saying that Wolf Among Us 2 is still going to come out this year. So, 2024. Okay, it was delayed to 2024. That's my bad. Telltale announced the game will be delayed to 2024.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they announced there was a delay on it. So, I'm still like excited. I want to see what the third episode is. I'm hoping it's a bit more meat on the bone this time. It's like with 3 episodes in at that point, something has to happen with Camino Drummer's story and be like a bit more intense, if anything. So yeah, that's our conversation for episode 2, and it's very short as the episode is itself.
It's just like I think this game will age well, though. I do think that, because there's a lot of good gameplay to this. I love the gameplay. I love the anti-gravity. I love the story. I love the characters. I just want to have more time with them.
That's the issue ultimately where it's coming to. I agree with you fully, because it's like, I love the zero gravity. It's a lot of fun. I like the kind of characters I've met. Like, I'm intrigued to watch The Expanse because I've played this as well. I like Kamina Drummer. I love Kamina Drummer. I love Khan. I love some of these characters. They're great.
I love Karaji and her Twitter responses.
Yeah, that was not on my bucket list of 2023 of getting responses on Twitter. It was a very interesting response. It's like, she basically sent like an emoji, which you can see on Twitter if you want to go look at it.
Yeah, a little vegetable, squash, if you will. Yeah.
In response to Erica Mori's interview with us, and I just remember thinking, I said to Adam, "Am I thinking too deep on this? I'm like, what is the meaning of this? Is like, have I like missed? Is there like a vegetable in the Expanse or something?" And he's like, "No, it's like no. You know, it's a different thing." I was like, "Ah," and then the performance director Zachary Andrews was responded with a lot, and he's like, "Ah," I was like, "I get it now. Like, I do get it a bit more." No, generally speaking, though, The Expanse is a good kind of... I'm so confused with it at the minute. I feel confused every time I play a chapter, an episode, because it's like when you said we can't review each episode. It's just not the same way of doing it, because it's such a different game. I'm still trying... Yeah. I'm still deciding here, thinking like, is this a Telltale game? Or is this a Deck Nine game? Is this a Deck Nine game with the exoskeleton of a Telltale game? You know, whatever they used to do with that. It's like, what... You know, I'm kind of flip-flopping in between it. So it's a difficult one to kind of like ultimately... decide on at the minute. So yeah, we'll stay on top of it. We'll bring back the episode 3 kind of review in the next episode, and I think we'll have a proper more Life is Strange topic in between us to kind of wait out. Yeah, anything else to add?
No.
Yeah, it's very much a shorter episode. This, as I said, there's not much that's happened, so it's kind of like, hopefully next month better things come along, and other Life is Strange topics as well we can figure out. If you do have any topics, let us know in the comments. We can happily cover them. Adam, Spread the Arts, that comes back this week. Would you like to go first?
I watched a good amount and I've played a good amount. I'm playing Tears of the Kingdom right now, but I'm not gonna put that on my Spread to the Arts. Man, I am watching a good amount and I'm trying to like just pick one. You know what, what have I done? I don't know. This is one that I'm just like, oh man, because again, I'm heavily working on a new EP, so it's like whenever crunch time comes in, like everything becomes a blur. So why don't you go first, and let me just think about that.
So I'll probably surprise you here.
Okay.
So I've been feeling very mixed about things. So I've been spending my time in the last couple of weeks listening to Taylor Swift's music, her remastered works. I've been listening to Taylor's versions of songs, and just to admit it very much quietly here, I'm a big Taylor Swift fan at times. Very much the earlier works as well. Like the first couple of albums, I was a very big fan, and then fell off a little bit. Well, I've kind of like come in tune with her again now because she's been doing her remasters, which have been.
You just made me think about what I'm gonna. But go for it. You just made
well,
me
I'm
think
glad
about
that. I'm glad that. I'm glad that Taylor Swift has served the inspiration for this segment. But no, so yes. I've been listening to Taylor's versions. I've been listening to Fearless, which is her breakthrough album, her second album after Taylor Swift, which was her self-titled album, I believe. I don't know how I really feel about what she's doing with her project. I get it, though. I get it because, like, the license she got, like, her entire thing, was it with Big Machine Record or something? The company that she used to work with for her license of her six albums. And then also her battle with Scooter Braun. I get it why she's doing, like, where she wanted the licenses back for her music and why she's, like, remastering them. But the problem is, she's not the same musician as she once was. So, like, you have to remember, like, Fearless, which is, like, her second album. I believe she was, like, 16, 18 at the time, around about that age. She's now 33. She's, like, now 33. So she's, like, even when you, like, listen to what, like, for example, the song I was listening to before we even came on here, like, Love Story, it's a very country / pop infused song. Like, that was very early Taylor Swift, where she was very much country. And then, like, you know, she had that entire, like, thing with people saying, oh, she sold out country and she's gone into pop and stuff like that. Love Story is almost like pop song in that remaster. It's like proper, like, it's kind of got rid of the full-on acoustic kind of instrument style guitar that was seen in country music. Her voice has heavily changed since then as well. She's not as young. And, like, Love Story and all these songs that she wrote are very much reflections of the time she wrote them. So it's like she's a different Taylor Swift every time she writes a song. So it's like when she's singing something like Love Story, or she's bringing singing something like Mine, for example, they were different parts of her life at different stages. And the woman she is now isn't the woman she's singing as. So it's like it's a very weird thing where I've got with a feeling of like her doing this with her music and remastering them and then listening to the songs. Like, I can't get over the fact that I've like listened to Love Story in this one, which is the original version, and then listened to Love Story's Taylor version. I feel like the entire point is like the reason she's doing it more so is because of the entire feud that she had with Scooter Braun, and also the entire like debacle she had with the masters of each of the six albums that they had initially had. So I feel like she's just doing it for that, but it's like it doesn't really add any purpose to the music. Do you get what I mean?
Yeah. No, it's
like,
I understand.
It's like if Tupac Shakur was still alive and he had an entire like spat with Death Row Record, Suge Knight had sold all of his masters off to like P. Diddy, for example. P. Diddy held them and he got them back, and then he did Tupac's version of like All Eyes on Me, or like it's such a weird person to pick. But it's like if he did that and he did masters versions, like his voice wouldn't be the same. He wouldn't be the same person. His tracks would sound all different. It's like, what is the purpose here? So I've seen this with like, I even spent a bit of time like reading some reviews of Taylor's versions, and people were saying the same thing. Like reviews are like, obviously these are classics she's done. Like they took her to stardom. They're great songs in themselves, etc. But then like they're like, yeah, again, but she's like, she's not Taylor Swift anymore. She's not 18, 16 year old Taylor Swift. She's now 33 year old Taylor Swift singing these songs remastered. Her voice is different. Yeah. She's in a different time in her life. And even the remasters are juggling things where I'm a bit like, I don't know how I feel about it. I don't know how I feel about people going back to their music and changing them. I don't know how I feel about even like the main point is that with Taylor Swift, what she's doing, it kind of reminds me of like when George Lucas spent the better part of 30 years remastering New Hope, Empire Strikes Back, and Return of the Jedi. And there was like 30 years of different variations that we had of those films. Like everyone, most people just like to watch the 1970s ones that were released, 1970s to 80s. They're like, we're happy with those. And it's like, then there was like, and here's a remaster, and here's a remaster, and here's another thing. It's like, I'm kind of like keen on watching the Coppola edition of The Godfather Part 3. I love The Godfather Part 3, much to much people's detriment. I like The Godfather Part 3, but I'm like, what even with your edits can you change here, Coppola? It's like, what it was is what it was. It's like, you're kind of going back and starting fiddling with things that you've created. Like, masterpieces are masterpieces. And then on top of that, masterpieces also have flaws in them. And inherently, I think it's very difficult to me to talk to someone. Even I said to Michelle, I was like, if you could go back, would you change anything? Life is Strange. Would he? Like, would he really want to go back and change it? Because, like, you look at his reaction then to, for example, them making the decision with the remastered collection and then them having a scene where, like, Max is crying at the end. And he's like, but why is she crying? It's like, why is she crying? It's like, you've basically obliterated what is, not his words, my words. You kind of obliterated the entire point of Max not crying there. She's not meant to cry. She's not She's not in that space. So it's like, as I said, it's very telling with things. It's like, it's easy to kind of like, you do something and then think, oh, we're going to change it and we're going to do this to kind of like fine tweak it and make it a bit more, whatever reason it is. But in itself, like in between all that waffle I said, I just find it very interesting that she's gone back and done the Masters. Like, obviously, like, her fans are loving it and people are loving it and stuff like that, but it's a very interesting choice to do watch, and especially specifically with her music.
Yeah, I can definitely see where you're coming from, because it's like, it is a different time. I even think about, like, some, like, of course, my first EP, like, I totally want to remaster that, but it's like, it's also a time capsule of where I was in that time, but I'm also not going through a legal battle of myself. So it's like, yeah, you know, if Spotify were to take down Essence of Life, you know, with the great Kylie Brown, like, I don't know, maybe I would remaster it, but just like, I don't know, I like it where it is, because that's the place I was at that time, and that was the lessons I had. But yeah, it is, I definitely see where you're coming from with the gripes. Yeah,
I just find it very, I think she's personally done it because she had that massive gripe with Scooter Braun.
I think so.
And like, because obviously, like, I think it's like, is it Big Machine? I think it's Big Machine Record. They were the company that owned her licenses to start with. It's someone else who owned it. I think it's because Scooter Braun took over Big Machine. I don't really delve into this deep enough, but he'd taken over and then he like took hold of her license. I think he sold them. Maybe he sold them without her permission. It was something like, it was like a big debacle, because like, she properly went like off on it. And I think that's why she's done it, because she basically is trying to quote like collect her property. So it's like, yes, every single album she's had, it's like, it's now quote unquote mine. But at the same time, like, you're remastering, but you're a different person from the one that you were making these. So it's like, your voice doesn't have the same emotion, or it doesn't have the same resonance with it. It's going to be different. For I find it quite interesting. I find it's interesting she's doing it. And the purpose of why she's doing it, it's kind of, I think that maybe kind of clouds the judgment of like just leaving your music as it is. Like, remasters aren't unheard of. Like, people do it with other, I think was it Kelly Clarkson that did it with her music. Someone's done it before, like with their own music. And it's like,
I do it with my own music. Like, Summertime Dreams was a song I've remastered. Even Little People are just like, it's just like that one thing. Just like, you know, speaking as a musician myself, yeah, there's some songs I don't want to touch because I was in a different time, but then there's other songs where I do want to touch because I listen to it. I'm like, with the knowledge I have now, with who I am now, like, I can do it so much better now.
But
also, at the same time,
let's take this example. I don't know if you feel the same way. Like, for example, let's say Spotify had a dispute with you. I'm the CEO and I take control of your masters there. And I take control of the masters for the Essence of Life. And you go through a high profile dispute with me, and I keep it then. And I'm like, keeping it. And then you eventually win it back. So you take the Essence of Life back. And so this is like 10 years later. And this was obviously like, for example, with Fearless, her album, that's like 15 years at least minimum. I think 10, 15 years that it's been since she even recorded that. You take that then, yeah? You get the Essence of Life back. And 10 years later, this is 10 years later, you get the license back for it. You decide to re-record it. So you have to record the music again for it. And then you're re-recording the lyrics with Kylie, who's now much older in her life. Her voice is going to change, etc. And at the same time, Marcus is going to have to re-record his lines, and he's going to be much older, and his voice is going to be different as well. Even though it might be very much
more
Barry
booming.
White. Yeah, so we very much like Barry White, but like at the same time, his voice will be different. He'll be in a different place in his life. Will you be able to capture the same magic that you create in the original track in a remaster? Never. It's going to sound different every time. You could sit there in front of that computer, in front of a keyboard, in front of whatever you wanted, 1500 times. You could sit there and try it. You'll never make the same thing you get.
Exactly.
And I don't think you'd even be happy with it either. So like, for me, that's what I question with Taylor Swift. I'm like, are you really happy with this track? It's like, I get it.
Well, yeah. Like, there's also just like you said, like, it's a different context. It's now more poppy is,
She was heavily criticized for it. Heavily criticized for moving away from country. Like, that's why her music is like, her entire discography, when you look for it, she moved away from pops from country so much, and people are like, wait a minute, it's your entire roots of it. And it's like, fair enough,
you made it because country, like, she was like the most approachable country music at the time. Like, a lot of country at that time was not approachable for like newcomers, and Taylor Swift was like the gateway into that.
Yeah,
and then, you know, took a different route, and I'm like, you know what, she's getting her bag, I'm respecting it, but same times, like, man, don't you want to go now? Have you listened to Folklore?
No.
Oh my god, dude, listen to Folklore, because like, she goes back to her roots in Folklore. It's so, Folklore is my favorite Taylor Swift album of all time.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Oh God, yeah, because it happened in, which is actually going to be, you know, like going kind of into what mine is, but like it was her 2020 album where all the studios shut down, and so she finally recorded from her home, and it's right. very much tailored to her core, and it's Folklore yeah. is like my favorite album by Taylor Swift.
That's interesting. That yeah, her albums are quite interesting. Like she moved away from into the pop thing. It's like fair enough, you accept it for what it is, but then if you put pop electric synthesis on like Fearless, for example, it's disjointed. I'm sorry, like yeah. your music sounds very different. It doesn't fit the time of what it is. It's like trying to go back to the Beatles music early on and start putting like loads of electrical guitar riffs and stuff into it. It's like
yeah.
It's, like, no. It's not gonna work, man. George Harrison's music was the way that he did it. The way he played the guitar is how he's gonna play the guitar. Mm-hmm. It's like you're changing too much of something. So it's like for me, I find her versions quite an interesting concept. I think it's probably for me better overshadowed her judgment in terms of doing them because of the Scooter Braun, Big Machine, etc. like debacle. So yeah, nonetheless, I thought I'd mention that. I think Taylor Swift has taken up about 50 minutes of this conversation, but yeah, nonetheless, you can pick your Spread the Arts. I thought you might enjoy that because it was music for me.
Oh yeah, and especially with Taylor Swift. She's a Pennsylvania girl, which I'm Pennsylvania boy, so of
she's course, Pennsylvania?
Like, yeah, Lancaster, Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yeah, she's Pennsylvanian. Her parents moved her to Nashville to like really skyrocket her dreams.
Yeah,
but yeah, she's Pennsylvania. Yeah,
I remember the story about her, like her packing her bags up. Like the parents basically, she like made her, like her parents like made the decision to pack up her bags, this untested like girl, and then took her to like lift off her music career, which is wild. But I didn't realize she was actually born in Pennsylvania. That's quite mad. That.
Yeah, I was like, that's my Pennsylvania girl, dude. Like I can't lie. But yeah, no. So speaking on not Pennsylvania, I'm speaking on a Swedish artist. So my favorite musician right now this is my favorite musician is Casbo, which I mentioned before. Casbo released in 2020 my favorite album of all time. I love this album dearly. It's called The Making of Paracosm. He has not released any music since The Making of Paracosm in 2020. And even that album, he was struggling to release because after the release of his first album, he was starting to have hearing loss. Like he was sitting by a lake one day and he's just like, I don't know if I can do music anymore because he's developing this sort of hearing loss. And he just said, no, screw it. And made one of my favorite albums of all time. He's finally released a new track, which is called The Way. It looks like that, and it's called The Way You Had Me. And he released something on Twitter. Oh, I just made the image bigger. There we go. I like the cover art. It's nice.
Is that cloud?
Yeah, in the background, but it's more of like a cave almost. It's like, it's really cool. Like, I like the aesthetic of that. It's very nice.
Oh, I thought it was a cloud with like lightning around it at first. So yeah, it's a cave then.
Yeah, no, it's a nice aesthetic. And the way he said it, like, on Twitter saying that he doesn't know his place in the electronic world. He has his style, but he wants to go forward in another style. And this song was like that bridge in between his old style and what his new style is going to be. So he's like, I hope you support me. I want to change my style a little bit. And I'm like, I'm all about it, man. Like, because when I went from Adam Evil to Cast a Garden, that was like my change of like where I want to go with music. Mm-hmm. And it's a good song. It's about heartbreak, and it's about, you know, whether or not that love was real or not. You know, did we have something, or was it just the way you had me at the time? Mm-hmm. It's really good. I think the music is different from usual Casbo. I remember I listened to it and I was like, it's not what I expect Casbo to do. And and that's the thing. I think that's what he's doing. I think he's just saying like, hey, you knew Casbo before, but I want to go a different route. And as a fellow artist, I'm like, I understand that. You know, I understand that, like, hey, you just can't be on the same grind all the time. In fact, it was Water Parks when they came out with their album called Fandom, which is an entire album of how much their fans suck. It's just like, it's a great album. But in their one track, I believe the second track, he starts talking about like you want to hear my art, but only on your terms. It's just kind of like that thing. It's like, you want to feel me, you want me to be an artist, but only on your terms, like only the way you want me to. And I think that's what Kaz was doing with The Way You Had Me. It's just like, I'm doing my art, not on your terms. This is where I want to be. So Kazbo, The Way You Had Me, go check out the single. I'm really excited for the new album to drop. So there it is.
There it is. Kazbo and Taylor Swift on the next Life is Strange soundtrack, and we'll wrap up there because I've wanted to get back into that. That's a good lengthy conversation on music. And again, guys, I hope you enjoyed this episode. We will be bringing back more Life is Strange stuff in the future, so do not worry about that. I know it's been a bit hit and miss in between, but nonetheless, I hope you enjoyed that episode. If you did, please do consider dropping a subscribe, turn notifications, like the video, and share with your friends. I hope you support the channel more than anything else. And also, again, Strangecast is always available on all podcast services, so you can check us out on Apple Music, Spotify, the video version, and all the other podcast services. We'll be back now in early September, so hopefully, fingers crossed, by the time this episode comes out, that Don't Know Montreal has not announced its game, otherwise I will be absolutely furious. But no, hopefully we don't have that announcement just right now. But yeah, as I said, we'll be back in early September. If you have any suggestions, any comments, any ideas you want us to cover in Life is Strange topic-wise, please do leave them in the comments section. We have used fan topics before. But until then, take care, guys. We'll see you again.
Later.